They love it in Regia in New South Wales.
But this is one of your silliest questions I've heard for a long time.
I understand how childish you make yourself look.
You write lovely letters and you get lovely infrastructure.
I move that item number 1494 in relation to saving the planet dealt with.
I think the quality of that eye was almost a motion of surrender.
Harley Waffle, the week in New South Wales politics with Kelly Fuller.
Well, hello and welcome to Parley Waffle, the final Parley Waffle of the year. And for our last chat, we've brought in the big guns, our ABC state political reporter, Ashley Raper. Hello, Ash.
Hi, Kelly. That's a very nice introduction.
And look, what a political year it's been. On the Richter scale, how would you describe the magnitude of the tremors that have run through the bear pit this year?
Well, look, I actually think it's off the scale. You know, we thought that 2020 was a huge year, and I think nothing really prepared us for 2021. If you just even think about how the year started, Gladys Berejiklian as the Premier, we had Jodie McKay as the opposition leader. We'd all thought that we'd kind of dealt with COVID. There was a bit of a rough patch of the Northern Beaches over Christmas, right. That there was a lockdown. And at the end of the year, we have a totally different Premier and we have a totally different opposition leader, and we spent a long time in lockdown. And I just think nobody, if you could put money on how this year went, I don't think anybody would have won any money on at all.
So look, do you think maybe we were sent a forewarning of the sparks because of that by-election in the Upper Hunter, triggered by the resignation of Michael Johnson after Trish Doyle in the Blue Mountains used parley privilege to accuse an unnamed government MP of raping a sex worker? So, you know, that all unfolded. He says he was vindicated in August when police said there was, you know, no charges to be laid, insufficient evidence. But you know, did the handling of all of this cost Jodie McKay her own job, do you think?
Very much so. Look, I think in terms of Jodie McKay, there had been people who were undermining her leadership within her own party for quite a long time. And look, and it was very difficult for her to be an opposition leader at that time in terms of COVID. It wasn't just unique to New South Wales, but everywhere else, opposition leaders weren't really getting a look in and they couldn't play politics like they normally do. It was very hard for Jodie McKay to get a lot of cut through, and then realistically the Upper Hunter by-election was an excuse for her party and the people, her enemies or people who wanted her removed within her own party to swoop in and have her removed as the opposition leader. And it was one of those by-elections that kind of took on a life of its own and became about Jodie McKay's leadership, but also became about the government as well, because they were teetering on the edge of being in minority. But just before it all happened, they lost another MP, Gareth Ward, who was a Liberal MP, had to sit on the crossbench because he's under police investigation. So it was quite a crucial by-election for a lot of reasons. But I think back and I was like, that was in May. That seems so long ago. And there was so much focus on that, but then so much has happened since then.
Right. Then we head into budget season and the Treasurer lands a pretty bland budget, but then the Parliament and MPs are crashed headfirst into a COVID crisis.
The virus has breached state Parliament. One minister has tested positive and the Premier herself was caught up in contact tracing. Macquarie Street today went on high alert as authorities scrambled to secure the Parliament building.
What was it like?
I think it's really interesting going back to that week. The budget was on the Tuesday. There were a lot of events that night as well, and I was actually at one of events where the Premier was, and I can remember it was the last time really I saw her outside of those COVID presses before she resigned. Then by the Friday, half of Sydney was locked down, and then by the Saturday, the whole of Greater Sydney was locked down, including the surrounds, including Wollongong, you know, all those areas. And it just seemed like this rapid escalation.
And then we begin this new world of daily media briefings about COVID.
Those COVID press conferences that were at 11 o'clock, and I went to so many of them. And look, they were hard work, I can tell you. And it was really difficult to get straight answers. Look, now with Dominic Perrottet as the Premier, we do understand now that the health advice that Gladys Berejiklian spoke so much as Premier, that everything was based on health advice, everything was based on health advice. And I think really we know now that It wasn't it. Yes, it absolutely factored into the decisions. But what happened in that crisis cabinet, which we don't know because it was secret, because it is cabinet in confidence. And so these cabinet papers will be released in 30 years, or I think it's 30 years. So I promise you I will read them because I'll be still so interested 30 years later.
Pollywaffle, the week in New South Wales politics with Kelly Fuller.
Ashley Raper, the ABC state political reporter, with us as we take a look back at the year that was in Pollywaffle. And Ash, the year wasn't done with us yet. Next dropped this absolute clanger.
Therefore, it pains me to announce that I have no option but to resign from the office of Premier. My resignation will take effect as soon as the New South Wales Liberal Party can elect a new parliamentary leader. In order to allow the new leader and government a fresh start, I'll also resign from the New South Wales Parliament once I've consulted the Electoral Commission on appropriate timing for a by-election, given the COVID restrictions. My resignation as Premier could not occur at a worse time, but the timing is completely outside of my control, as the ICAC has chosen to take this action during the most challenging weeks of the most challenging times in the state's history.
Did the Premier make the right decision? Should she have stepped aside, Ash?
Look, I think she had no other option. As soon as that press release came out from the ICAC saying that she was the subject of an investigation, she had to go. It was such a shocking day and it was such an abrupt end. But look, I think there was always a feeling that perhaps it would always come to this. We knew that the ICAC had reopened their investigation. There had been so many rumours in Macquarie Street for such a long time that perhaps that this was coming. I was in the room when she delivered that statement, and she was composed, but yes, she was nervous. She had clearly looked like she had been crying. She probably had spent the night
all
crying
night, yeah.
In that speech as well. She took made a very deliberate swipe at the ICAC about the timing and the investigation, which has now prompted this whole debate that is still ongoing about the authority and independence of the ICAC. But look, I think that there's still a lot of confidence and the community very much back the ICAC. In terms of Gladys Berejiklian and how they look at that, obviously the investigation is ongoing and we won't have any findings for quite some time.
Then a few more
and
went.
With all the speculation that's gone on around Gilmore, I want to confirm that I am no longer going to remain as a New South Wales Cabinet Minister. I'll be obviously resigning from State Parliament, seeking a transition to the Federal Parliament at the next election.
Today, I say farewell to the people of New South Wales, say thank you for your support, thank you for allowing me and giving me the privilege and the honour to serve as Deputy Premier and to my colleague to serve as Leader of the National Party.
So Andrew Constance first there and still pre-selection ongoing for the Liberals in Gilmore, but Barilaro, such a dominant figure. Ashley, you know, many are waiting to see what Paul Toole looks like still in his place. He still sort of hasn't really left a mark. It's only been 2 months, I appreciate that. But how different is the coalition leadership team now? And do you think rural and regional voices are being held as strongly with Paul Toole standing next to Dom Perrottet?
Look, I think John Barilaro and Paul Toole, look, their styles are so incredibly different. And John Barilaro was very much a problematic figure, especially for the Premier Gladys Berejiklian, but for a lot of the Liberals. But yes, he did get things done. He came to power right after the Nationals had lost the Orange by-election to the Shooters, Fishers and Farmers Party. So they had a lot of ground to make up. So John Barilaro had to come out and make a splash. I think Paul Toole takes over at a very different time. But yes, the Nationals have lost a number of seats under John Barilaro's watch as well. Seats on the North Coast, they've lost Murray.
Yeah, we've seen the Shooters surge a bit. There's a sense that the Nationals have moved further from the farmer voice to maybe a mining voice and a more urban voice, hasn't there? So it's a shifting ground, isn't it, for the Nationals to figure out.
Yes, and I think as well maybe that Paul Toole brings it back to that more regional, rural focus as well, because look, they do have challenges. There's an election a year away, so they need to ensure they keep that regional voice. But I think as well, Dominic Perrottet is very aware of that. And I think that the Liberal Party has seen that they really lost a lot of connection with rural and regional communities. And they knew that they needed to work to get that back with Gladys Berejiklian and John Barilaro. And I think that Paul Toole and Dominic Perrottet will continue that work.
And some of the unresolved issues, regional issues, if we can just dig in here a bit, huge issues revealed in the Rural Health Inquiry, absolutely shocking evidence that's been provided there, concerns about the change in possible stamp duty to an annual land tax. The farmers want that off the table for them. There's maybe a change in policy on uranium mining. There's animal welfare. There's land management questions. Do you think any of that is being pushed urgently for resolution within the government? Is any of that playing out, you know, what you're hearing, Ash?
Look, not at this stage, but you have to remember as well, we're about to go into a number of by-elections, and one of those is going to be in Bega, the other one is in Monaro. So there's two regional by-elections that are going to happen, and so these issues will come to the fore. Look, I think in terms of the stamp duty land tax, I think that that is likely that it's not going to happen. I think the government is really walking that back. Look, I think rural and regional health is going to be a huge issue, and that's going to really play out in the Bega by-election. But we're about to face a cabinet reshuffle as well, and I think that it is likely that there will be a new health minister. So that, again, puts a renewed focus on that as well.
Well, let's talk about that. How many changes are you hearing? I'm hearing as many as 10. Sarah Mitchell has been quite aggressive towards the Teachers Federation. Does she want to hang on to her portfolio? What are you hearing?
Look, I think very much that Sarah Mitchell would like to keep education, but I understand that the Liberals do want the education portfolio back.
Right.
So it is likely that it will go back to the Liberals and it won't stay as a national portfolio. Look, I think it is going to be quite a significant change in terms of the cabinet, because there will be some outgoing, more senior members, I think, who perhaps won't run again at the next election. There's a big question mark over people like Brad Hazzard, who has been there for such a long time, and whether they'll run. There's Shelley Hancock on the South Coast, whether she'll run again. But also he has a women's issue, very much so. He has to put more women in cabinet, and that means booting out some men. I think we will see quite a substantial reshuffle.
As you're pointing to there, Ash, you know, 2022, we'll watch the federal election play out around them. They'll have done with the reshuffle early. What do they do to reshape? What does Perrottet, you know, the Toole government, how do they build an agenda that takes them to the election?
Yeah, it's really interesting because Dominic Perrottet really likes to present himself, or is attempting to present himself very much as a visionary premier. He wants to take over responsibility for childcare and the Commonwealth. I think he really likes to do that, those big picture thinking ideas. But when you're premier, you've got really immediate pressures day to day, and you need to work out, especially in Sydney, that there's not cracks in trams, that the trains run on time. Look, I think that Dominic Perrottet has very much that economic focus, and I think he really wants to look at those cost of living pressures that will really, I think, dominate the next year. And I think that that's very much what Labor wants to talk about too, and that struggle around the families.
What do you see, or how do you see the Nationals working to contain the Shooters, Fishers and Farmers and even One Nation? I guess they've certainly learnt not to go up against each other again like they did in the Upper Hunter by-election. Do the Nats have a lot of work to do, do you think, Ashley?
I think the Nationals have learned a lot over the past few years, and I think that they are at a very strong position at the table with the Liberals to get funding and to work out what community needs. It's much more of a partnership than it was, I think, a while ago. And it's how they then go out and connect with communities, and it's very hard to win these seats back. You know, to win the seats back from the Shooters, Fishers and Farmers, or from the Greens up in Ballina. They've got an immense challenge ahead of them to hold on to the seats that they've got. Whether they'll win more, it does seem unlikely at this point. But look, a week's a very long time in politics. A year is a long time. But it will be interesting how Paul Toole develops into this role. I think he's very much the head down, hard working type. Whether that is going to be enough is really the big question.
Ashley Raper, what an incredible year you've had. Thank you for the chat, and congratulations on a huge year. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Kelly, and thanks for having me.
The ABC's New South Wales state political reporter, Ashley Raper. And the own goal of the week goes to all the boomers out there. Here's a message from your Premier.
The reality is beauty builds culture. And for too long, those older people in the room, your generation in the 60s and the 70s ruined many aspects of our great city. And it comes to the, and it's the millennials' role to fix it. And as Premier, I will.
And thanks for your company this year. Catch you next time.